Welcome to Cage Bangers MMA.
Hey guys, today is September 5th, 2011, and thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Cage Bangers MMA. We're going to get things started off today with a brief recap of UFC 134. Let's start with Eric Silva versus Luis Ramos. I don't know if you know these guys, but apparently they were both champions in the respective leagues they fought in Brazil before they were picked up by the UFC. And it didn't last long. 40 seconds, Eric Silva trashes Ramos with a right hand, puts him on his ass, knocks him out cold. And then we had the Brazilian Luis Kane fighting the Bulgarian Nedkov. Nedkov beat the shit out of him and ended up being the very first Bulgarian to win inside the octagon, which was surprising to me. I mean, Luis Kane is known to be a big, strong dude, and he has not really had the best run in his last few fights, picking up only one or two wins. And he was thoroughly trashed by the Bulgarian in this fight. Moving on, there was Edson Barboza versus Ross Pearson. Edson Barboza is a vicious leg kick master. He's very quick, very powerful. And Pearson took the very best Barboza had to throw at him and kept on trucking. Ended up losing a decision to Barboza, but in my opinion, this loss is going to do more for Ross Pearson's career than any of the other wins under his belt. Moving on to what I was actually expecting to be one of the better cards on the night, Brandon Schaub versus Antonio Nogueira, Big Nog. Everyone, including betting odds, kind of had Schaub up just a little bit. And when I came up to the stand-up, I thought, for sure, if you had asked me before the fight how this was going to go down, I said Brandon Schaub by knockout, you know, first or second round. And Schaub came out throwing. He landed some really good shots on Big Nog, but Big Nog just took him like a champ. I mean, he's been around for a long time. He's been out of the octagon a long time. You know, ring rust was thought to be an issue. He's older. He says that he didn't exactly heal fully, but he was feeling healthy coming up to this fight, and he showed it. Although Schaub stuffed both of Nogueira's takedown attempts, Nogueira started to push the pace a little bit into the first round, ended up getting Schaub up against the cage, and just cracked him with a brutal right hand, and just didn't stop, not even a moment's hesitation, just followed up with a volley of strikes, sending Brandon Schaub flat on his face. Big Nog and coming back to the octagon and fighting for the very first time in Brazil, he wins by knockout. Very, very impressive. A lot of people are saying he should retire with a win. I say shut the hell up. This guy's going to be around for a while still. He just stood with somebody who's already taken out Gonzaga and Krokop. You know, maybe they aren't at the tip-top shape of their careers, but that's still something to be impressed about. And Nog came in there and worked him. And with the pure athleticism Brandon Schaub has, the fact that Nogueira was able to keep up with him still says some good things about him. Next on the card, my boy Mauricio Shogun Hua in his rematch against Forrest Griffin. I think that it took Shogun longer to walk out to the cage than it did for him to trash Griffin. No offense to Forrest Griffin, I understand that your wife was possibly going into labor during this fight in America and you're across the seas fighting, but you gotta keep your head in the game. And he clearly didn't, and Shogun made him pay bad for it. Shogun looked to be in good shape walking up to the octagon. He didn't have so much flab laying around like he did against John Jones. He looked very focused, very pumped. His brother Marilla was there with him, and you could tell he was ready to get into the octagon. And he looked pretty crispy in there. He was moving around. Forrest Griffin did throw some good shots. He actually caught Shogun, not terribly bad, but you know he clipped him pretty good. Shogun waved it off, and after that, every single strike Forrest Griffin tried to throw, Shogun just blocked. And you could even see at one point during the fight when the camera angle is facing Forrest, he says something under his breath. You can see his lips move, and he shakes his head like he's getting frustrated. Shogun lands a good uppercut when Griffin comes in. You know, they end up squaring back up in the center. Shogun hits him with a left and then a right, and hits him with another right just above the head, just barely grazes him. He puts Griffin down on the mat, and Shogun just jumped on him, took side control, and was, you know, straight down punching, and then changed over to those massive hammer fists he loves so much. And the ref stopped it at a minute and 53. Shogun was the winner by knockout. And the main event on the night was, obviously, if you don't know this, then you obviously wouldn't even be listening to this. Anderson Silva versus Yushin Thunder Okami. You know, people saying Yushin Okami's the, quote, best fighter to come out of Japan, unquote. And with good stand-up skills and good wrestling to boot, everyone thought it was going to be pretty much an exact playdown of the Chael Sonnen fight. You know, after Yushin Okami lost to Chael Sonnen, he called him up the next day and went and trained at his camp. And, I mean, Okami looked fairly good in the first round. Anderson Silva was just kind of sitting there, not really doing too much. Okami got him up against the cage and didn't really do anything too productive, but he got him with a couple shots. And the second round, if you had watched these rounds back-to-back, you wouldn't even have, except for, like, the trunks matching, you wouldn't even know they were in the same damn fight. Anderson Silva came out there and just laid a beating to him. Just kept his hands down, similar to the Forrest Griffin fight. Let Okami come in and just punished him with brutal efficiency with the jab. His first jab put Okami straight on his ass, and Anderson Silva signaled him to get up. Don't be a wiener. And Okami got up, and, you know, Anderson Silva just stood there and caught him with another jab, and literally, as if he was walking through the park, just moseys over to Okami after he knocks him down and just starts beating on him. Like, he's got all the time in the world to kick this guy's ass, which he did. It was only round two, and Okami rolled around a little bit, and then Anderson Silva decided, all right, I'm ready to finish this, and he did. I think that's 14 straight wins in a row for this dude. He's a freak. And Dana White actually spoke about him fighting GSP. They say if both these fighters win maybe their next 2 to 3 fights that they should fight. And then other people are saying there's not an arena in the entire world that can hold an audience that would want to pay to see that. So, all in all, the undercards and the main cards and the main event and everything, it was all really good. And definitely something you should not have missed. And if you did, go out and rent it or something, because me talking to you and you seeing it are two totally different things. And I can't really explain to you how crazy it was. There was only 14,000 people in that arena. You know, I went to UFC 123 at the Palace at Auburn Hills, and there were a lot of people in there, and it was pretty fucking loud, and it was pretty damn loud in Brazil too. So the next card coming up in a couple weeks, I think it's September 17th, is Jake Ellenberger versus Jake Shields. And I just found out 2 days ago that Jake Shields' father actually just passed away this past week. And he has chosen to still fight. I'm not really all too familiar with Ellenberger, so I'm not going to really say too much about this fight. The rest of the card seems fairly uneventful. Ultimate Fighter participants and whatnot. The big deal is the week after that is you got Quentin Rampage Jackson fighting current light heavyweight champion John Jones. His only loss comes to a questionable disqualification against Matt Hamill. I think he clearly should have been disqualified from the match, but I also think the match really shouldn't have gone as long as it did. When you get hit 50-some-odd times in mount before you take an illegal elbow, the ref should have probably already stopped it. But nevertheless, he's technically undefeated when no one's ever beaten him, and he just is coming off a very dominant win over Mauricio Shogun Hua a few months back earlier in the year. And I'm very confused about John Jones. Arrogance just pours off of him, yet he claims how humble he is. And in a way, he has a right to be arrogant. I don't know anybody who's gone in and just beaten Shogun's ass. Like, Shogun did nothing, couldn't do anything against John Jones. He just thrashes almost everyone he goes through. I mean, granted, that 84.5-inch reach advantage probably doesn't hurt his case. But regardless, the guy is talented. Very talented. Youngest UFC champion. Should not be overlooked by anybody, regardless if he's ignorant or arrogant or a a bitch, whatever you want to say, I don't care. You gotta respect the man for the things he's done and the things he's most likely gonna do in his future. However, the man standing across from him in the cage is a beast. No matter what way you look at it, you know? In my opinion, Jon Jones has never been really hit in the UFC. No fighter has really thrown something heavy that landed cleanly. Rampage has really, for a while, was worrying me that he was going to be done in the MMA world. And in his last few fights, has really shown that he has, even though he hates training, he is training hard. His weight looks good. He looks healthy. His head movement and his foot movement look really good, along with his boxing, as usual. If Jon Jones isn't careful, Rampage can worm his way in. And Rampage, he only has to hit you once. And I'm pretty sure that if Rampage connects on even one of his weaker punches, Jones is not going to be so eager to come in and be aggressive like he was with Shogun. And on top of that, Shogun looked like garbage that night, completely out of shape. So, not to take anything away from Jon Jones, but this isn't going to be the same kind of fight. You're looking at a healthy competitor. He's held a Pride belt and a UFC belt. I mean, you're looking at a guy who picked up Ricardo Arona while he was being choked out by a triangle and power bombed him into unconsciousness. Jones gets his hands laid on by Rampage. He's going out cold, no doubt about it. I'm actually going to go crazy and call Rampage by third round knockout in this. Because I just want to see Jon Jones lose, and I think if Rampage hits him, it's going to be done. Another fight on that night is Diego Sanchez is going to fight Matt Hughes. This is a pretty interesting matchup. Matt Hughes, the last fight, I saw him fight live at UFC 123. You know, I seem to have seen a lot of these fighters who are fighting recently there. BJ Penn obviously trashed him very badly there. And Matt Hughes is obviously ending his shelf life as a fighter. He's getting old. Diego Sanchez moved back to welterweight, hopefully to see some success. He's a strong guy, very energetic. If you watch him come out of the cage, he's always screaming and he's just pumped up. I watched him get kicked square in the face by Clay Guida, he kicked Clay Guida square in the face and put Clay Guida on his ass instantly. That just kind of shows you the power that he has behind his strikes and the aggressiveness and how fast he can throw them. Although he ended up battling with Guida for the next three rounds, he is very aggressive, very strong grappler. He's trained jiu-jitsu with Saulo Ribeiro, which is interesting because my instructor, EJ Ledesma, has actually trained under Saulo for many years, and Saulo had a great deal to do with EJ Ledesma's path to becoming a black belt. Ribeiro jiu-jitsu is very solid. And then you talk about Diego Sanchez's wrestling. He trains with the high schools down there. And he's always constantly looking to improve himself. Matt Hughes really has nada left to prove in the UFC. Pretty much the most dominant welterweight champion of all time outside of George St. Pierre now. Great wrestling. Good stand-up. And the biggest thing here is experience and his time in the cage. He doesn't get hyped up. He doesn't get worked up. He's very focused inside the cage, Matt Hughes. And this is all the makings to be a good matchup. I think Diego Sanchez's athleticism and the fact that he's younger and faster and just more intense is going to earn him a victory here, but it's going to be a good fight. And don't mistake it for a second. Matt Hughes puts Sanchez on his back, even with Sanchez's training with Ribeiro and getting some of that good jiu-jitsu in. Matt Hughes' vicious ground and pound and has really good jiu-jitsu of his own. You know, he submitted George St. Pierre. That's saying something right there. You know, between the Jackson and the Jon Jones fight and this, that alone is enough to make a great card. Moving on to something you may or may not have heard about, the UFC just signed a huge deal with Fox Sport Network, and this is just monumental for the UFC, for Fox, for MMA, for everyone involved. They've signed to quite a few years. I believe it's over 5 years contract at least, and the very first fight has been kind of tossed up in the air for a while. Fox gave them an hour to fill on November 12th, and a couple of the matches they were looking at were Ben Henderson versus Clay Guida, Mauricio Hua versus Dan Henderson. As you know, Dan Henderson is in talks with the UFC at coming back here after defeating Fedor and Strikeforce. Also, Junior Dos Santos, Cain Velasquez, who were actually slated to fight a week later at a pay-per-view. And just 2 days ago, the UFC announced that it was going to be Junior Dos Santos versus Cain Velasquez for the heavyweight championship, live and free on Fox. This is, you know, some people are saying this was a bad fight to pick. I think it's a good fight to pick. Although, both of them, not exactly, you have Junior Dos Santos, who's Brazilian. Cain Velasquez, who's kind of cocky and arrogant. He's a Mexican. And both kind of different. But they're both really soft-spoken fighters, and they both really leave all their shit on the cage. This is a hard matchup to call. Dos Santos has excellent jiu-jitsu, even though he chooses normally not to display it. He has knocked out most of his opponents, and, you know, he's beaten the likes of, he's gone three rounds with Shane Carwin and Roy Nelson, beating the hell out of both of them. Velasquez, very aggressive, very technical striker. You saw what he did to Lesnar. You saw what he did to Nogueira, just to name a few. Both of these fighters can knock each other out. Both of these fighters also have the kind of chin that can take them five rounds of getting beat up. Velasquez could easily, if he really, really tries and really sets up his takedowns, could get Dos Santos to the ground, although Dos Santos is huge. Taller and he's taller than Velasquez and a little bulkier, if you will. He's a lot wider. He's just got more mass, if you will, even though they'll probably weigh in around the similar weight. If Velasquez can get Dos Santos down, he can lay out some heavy ground and pound. And Velasquez's striking is very, very technical, and he could easily get past Dos Santos' guard if he isn't paying attention. Same thing said for Dos Santos, though. He's got good reach, and he knows how to use it. His jabs are brutal, his hooks are brutal, and he has proven he can take a shot, too. I really won't be all that surprised if this fight goes five rounds. I don't expect it to. I'm not going to call a winner because I have absolutely no fucking idea how this is going to end. But there's going to be fireworks, and this is huge. Even excluding the fight, also, Poirier's fighting Garza. You might remember Garza from the Shields GSP night, flying triangle victory. I don't know too much about Poirier, but I know he's definitely got some skills, so that should be interesting. Both of these guys trying to make a name for themselves. This is just amazing, though, for MMA. How many people, especially in America, you got baseball fans, basketball fans, some older people who watch, you know, football, and they don't even know what MMA is. To them, they just see MMA as boxing with men rolling around on each other, and they don't really understand what's going on. The UFC is effectively bringing MMA to the mainstream audience, which is incredible, because people who have never watched it in their life will be able to tune into Fox, which is a network they probably watch on a nightly basis anyway, and see something they've really never ever seen before. And it's great, because who doesn't want to watch two big heavyweights fight for a championship belt? I think this was an excellent pick for the UFC, and I think it's going to do great things for the UFC and the MMA world. Also, some questions have been circulating around Brock Lesnar's health lately. Dana White put that to rest. He says he should be back fighting in early 2012, and they're looking for him to fight Frank Mir. But Frank Mir wants to fight Alistair Overeem, who is currently in talks with the UFC, and there's some speculation as to whether or not the UFC should even bother signing him. He could be a huge bust, a lot of people are saying, and I'm not going to have to disagree with them there, because Alistair Overeem couldn't finish Verdum. Even he was just lazy. He hasn't shown interest in, I mean, he's the Strikeforce champion, sure, and he's got good kickboxing and striking, but what top-notch names has he beaten recently? He comes to the UFC, he's going to deal with Shane Carwin, who could easily knock him out if he landed a punch. Velasquez, Dos Santos, Frank Mir, Brock Lesnar, all these other up-and-coming heavyweights, Nogueira, Schaub. And I honestly don't see Alistair Overeem beating any of the top five fighters in the heavyweight division. And even if he makes it through 4 and 5, he sure as hell ain't taking the belt from Velasquez. He ain't going to beat Dos Santos, so I don't even know what the point of signing him is. He's not going to go anywhere, probably. He's slacking off and playing oh, I'm injured when I'm really not, and this and that. So I don't know if you really want a man like that representing the UFC. However, his name is enough to draw an audience, but I'd love to see him sign purely just for him to get his ass kicked. But that's just me. Also, interesting random tidbit of information that I just found out. The highest paid female athlete in the world is none other than women's Strikeforce champion Gina Carino. I thought that was pretty insane considering, you know, you have World Cup soccer teams and these famous tennis players and golfers in a cage fighter, which is probably, when you compare it to sports like hockey, football, basketball, even golf, is less popular than them at the moment, and in years, all those other sports will be living in the shadow of MMA, is ending up being the highest paid athlete. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And I think that'll about wrap it up for today, but before I go, I just want to remind you guys, please review us on iTunes if you listen to the podcast on your iPod. I mean, I'm not going to say, oh, give me 5 stars. Review us with what you think we deserve. And then if you could, leave feedback too. So, you know, if there's something that a lot of people don't like, then we can work to fix it. Because if I don't get feedback and you're not liking it, I can't change it. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at CageBangersMMA. And you can go to our website at www.cagebangersmma.wordpress.com. I'll occasionally post articles there and updates, and Steve, the producer, will occasionally post things up there too. But also, it also has links to the Twitter, to a Facebook group, and to iTunes. So be sure to listen, download, rate, comment, subscribe, tell your friends, etc. And I will see you guys 2 weeks from now with another episode. I'm out of here. Roar! Just sitting there making noise.